From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. Director Steven Soderbergh turns out about a movie a year, from Sex Lies and Videotape to Aaron Brockovich to Ocean's 11, 12, 13. Now he's focused his lens on the iconic revolutionary Che Guevara, played in the new movie Che by Benicio del Toro.
Déjeme decirle, let me tell you something, at the risk of sounding ridiculous. A true revolutionary is guided by great feelings of love. Love of humanity, of justice and truth.
The movie is an epic, two parts, each more than 2 hours long. The first film shows Che meeting Fidel Castro in Mexico, then becoming a hero of the Cuban Revolution. We also see Che Guevara on a visit to New York in 1964 to speak to the UN. Protesters pound the windows of his car, shouting, "Assassin, get out of Cuba." Then we see Che being fawned over at a cocktail party of the intellectual elite.
Sir, would the Comandante object to giving me his autograph?
That's part one. Part two shows Che Guevara's doomed campaign to bring revolution to Bolivia, where he was captured and executed. Director Steven Soderbergh says he went back to interview people who fought with Che or worked with Che to find illuminating details.
I wasn't looking for big stuff. I was looking for small stuff, like the scene where he's asked if he wants any powder on his face before he goes on TV, and he says no, and then he sees somebody else getting powder, and he says, yes, I'd like a little. You know, that was a story that we got from his translator, and those are the kind of things I was looking for.
What was it about those small moments?
It just made him human scale, and so I was trying to avoid the sort of traditional big scenes or the sense that any of them realize what role they're playing in history. I wanted the whole thing to be happening in a very naturalistic way, because I don't think until very late in the campaign in Cuba that they really understood the significance of what was happening.
Yeah, it's funny, because if we think of him as, you know, that iconic image on the T-shirt, how do you make that human? How do you get him out of that T-shirt and into something that's more real?
Yeah, well, I think part of the way to do that, for instance, in the opening of part one, is to both show him arriving in New York sort of in his rock star phase and at the height of his notoriety and fame, and contrasting that with him lost in the Cuban jungle suffering from asthma, and having the audience sort of see those two images alongside each other and wonder how they're going to converge.
As you know, the main controversy over the film is what's left out, the mm-hmm. period after the Cuban Revolution, when Che Guevara is the prison commander in Havana and there are executions, purges of opponents. That is not told explicitly in the movie. It's not shown in the movie.
Well, but that's what New York is.
This is Che's visit to New York in 1964.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point. Is he's here on his little junket, and everywhere he goes, people are calling him a murderer and an assassin. And in his speech at the UN, he talks about that. This was my version of handling that. It's obviously not going to satisfy people who define him entirely by that period, but that's my way of handling it. And I think anybody who looks at the thing from a certain distance can see that my choice to show these two campaigns is driven more by artistic needs than it is by political agenda. You know what I mean? I wanted to make a sort of a diptych where these two campaigns sort of talked back and forth to each other. So the center section there between those two campaigns just didn't fit what I wanted to do artistically.
Does it run the risk, though, of becoming hagiography to show just those?
It doesn't really matter to me. I mean, by definition, in making the film, I have to tell it from his perspective. I'm telling his story, not mine, because obviously I don't believe everything that he believes, but I'm making a movie about a believer, and there's a big difference between those two. For instance, if I made a movie about John Wilkes Booth and I put you in his experience, that doesn't mean I support the idea of shooting Lincoln. But my job as a filmmaker is to put you in his skin.
When you're working on a movie like this, two movies, 4 hours, controversial historical figure, how much are you thinking, will audiences like it? Will it sell? Or do you just leave that to, you know, Oceans 19, 20, and 21 to take care of?
No, I mean, I have the same question no matter what the movie is. And the answer is I can only make something that I would want to see, that I would stand in line and pay money for. If that's not my criteria, then I'm second-guessing myself, and I think that's that way lies madness.
And does it feel like a very different enterprise shooting? I mean, it sounds obvious that it would, shooting a movie like this, creating a movie like this, and, say, Ocean's 12, Ocean's 13.
No, I have to say the problem-solving aspect of it is pretty similar. And so for me, whether it's a Che or an Ocean's film or a tiny thing I did called Bubble a couple of years ago, the only difference is the number of people standing around. But the problem on a day-to-day level of how to make scenes work is the same.
Really?
Yeah. I promise.
Even if one is a caper and the other is a...
Well, I mean, there's more... You're probably telling more jokes on the set of Oceans than you are on Che. But, you know, there are times when... There's fun to be had even on a very serious movie.
What was the most fun on this one?
What? You mean, was there any fun on
yeah,
this one?
Well, maybe I should rephrase
no,
that.
No, not really. Not really. It was, like I said, happening so fast. And you had to be careful, too. I mean, there are guns going off and bombs blowing up. I mean, you had to be very, very focused to make sure that everything was going safely, at least.
I was watching a clip on YouTube of a Q&A you had after a screening in New York.
Yeah.
And the audience is very divided, and you hear somebody shouting out about Che. He's a murderer.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's 40 years ago. You have this scene in your movie. It's the same thing that happened when he went to New York.
Yeah. Well, and also, you know, I like when art can do that. I like when art is about something or is been made in such a way that gets people animated like that. I think that's terrific. It doesn't happen very much. I think it used to happen more. When you hear about Stravinsky playing The Rite of Spring for the first time and there was a riot in the concert hall, I mean, that's kind of cool.
So that was a good thing. Didn't look like you were having a good time at the time.
But. No, but, you know, it's still interesting. I remember the filmmaker Jean Renoir made a film called Rules of the Game, which, when it was premiered in France, was very, very controversial. And he describes watching a man tear his newspaper into strips and light it on fire. The guy hated the movie so much he wanted to burn the theater down. I just thought, wow, that's awesome.
That did not happen in New York, we should say.
No. I guarantee you, if the Q&A at the Ziegfeld that turned into anarchy had happened after Bush had dodged the shoes, then I'd be pretty bruised right now.
Well, Steven Soderbergh, it's good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Steven Soderbergh's film is titled Che, and you can hear him talk about his favorite new camera at npr.org. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.